We're going to be back in the book of Ruth, and really this is going to conclude this two-part series we started last week. Last week was really focused on Mother's Day, and we took a look at Naomi's perspective and her role in the book of Ruth. She was a mother that lost a husband, and eventually she lost her two sons. And last week there were some things that we learned about motherhood and really just life in general when we looked at the book of Ruth from her perspective. And I just want to recap, if you maybe weren't here with us, one of those things is that pain is a part of ordinary life. Naomi experienced a great deal of pain and loss, and because of that experience, it led her to feel as if God had turned against her. And when we looked at this, we learned that there's some truths about pain that when we take a look at the story, we discover it helps us have a proper perspective about pain and God. And one of the things that I really tried to drive home, and I hope you left with, was that God never leaves us alone in our pain. He places people in our lives that will walk alongside us through the pain, but the key is we have to allow those people to do that. God also has a purpose in our pain. Now look, I don't want to minimize Naomi's experience of pain and loss in this story. But I also don't want to minimize the great work that God did through her offspring, through her grandson Obed, who's the grandfather of King David. So today we're going to turn our attention to Ruth's place in the story. Last week we looked at Ruth just briefly. We saw that she was the person that walked alongside Naomi through that pain and loss and hurt. But I also want to stop for just a moment and remind you that Ruth also was experiencing loss and pain herself because one of Naomi's sons was Ruth's husband. And so in this story, sometimes at least it was easy for me to look at Ruth and say, wow, look how powerful this act that she does is, and almost forget that she too had lost a husband. But the reality is when we think about that and take into account her loss and the role that she plays, we see Ruth becomes a really great example when it comes to resilience and redemption. You know, all of you probably know by now that I spent about 5 or 6 years in chaplaincy, and because of that, it always exposed me to resilience. And one of the questions that often gets asked in caretaking circles is, you know, how is it that some people can suffer through tremendous loss and bounce back so quickly, while others go through relatively minor suffering compared to others, and they seem to not be able to cope or deal with it very well? You know, resilience is one of those things that's hard to put your finger on, but it doesn't just come into play when we talk about loss. There are a lot of things in life that we need to be resilient through. A lot of people have the ability to handle stressful situations well, while other people with just minimal stress, they seem to struggle. And we see this contrast in this account of Naomi and Ruth. Both Naomi and Ruth experience loss and both handle it completely differently. And when we key in on these differences that these two women have, we can learn about ourselves when it comes to how we view resilience and redemption. Not only can we learn a lot about ourselves, but we can learn a lot about how God works in our lives in these situations. So we're going to break this up a little bit differently this morning. We're going to look at the resilience of Ruth, and then we're going to look at how redemption fits into that. And then at the end, we're going to kind of put all of these things together and maybe some of the situations that we're experiencing, not only individually, but I think here as a community of believers. So go ahead and flip on over to Ruth. I will have most of the text on the screen. I also put out last night around 7 o'clock a Facebook post that has the link to the YouVersion event. So if you have the YouVersion Bible app, you can open that up and go to the event, and you'll have an outline that'll help you follow along with me this morning. So at the hospital, a lot of times I would walk into a room and be with a family that had just experienced a tragic loss. And I've encountered families that in that loss, they were very resilient. They were still grieving, but they were able to put one foot in front of the other and continue to do life. And I've walked into a room with families that experienced loss and their world just completely shattered and they couldn't even begin to imagine what to do next. And what I've learned through experience, and I think of what we also learn in this account of Naomi and Ruth, is there seems to be a correlation between faith and resilience. So I think if we do a comparison between Naomi and Ruth, we'll find some interesting things. There's a temptation, I think, as we approach stories in the Bible or accounts like this, we look at these people and we hold them to a standard that maybe they don't meet. When we look at Naomi, we have a tendency to view her as a woman of faith because she's in the Bible. She's right there, right? And we read about her. But when we do a close examination of her life and her actions, I think we really could call her faith in God into question. When problems arose in Naomi's life, she and Elimelech ran from those problems. That was their answer. So remember, the context of this story is there was a famine in the Promised Land. They lived in Bethlehem of Judah. There's a famine. And rather than trusting God and his provision in the land, they run away and try to find food somewhere else. And that's how they end up in Moab. Now, interestingly, this is the same scenario that Abraham found himself in. Abraham is facing a famine, and what does he do? He flees to Egypt, away from the place that God was taking him, somewhere else. And so Elimelech and Naomi, they run from their problems. And I ask the question, why not stay in the place that God promised? You know, this is the land, this is the location that God promised your people, and you're there. Why leave that place? Why go to a country like Moab that was viewed so negatively in the Israelite minds? And what we see in this context is that running from their problems resulted in greater loss. That's what they experienced. They run from a famine. She left hungry and she returned empty. That's what the story says. She left hungry, but she returned empty. I think their leaving shows a lack of faith, a lack of belief that God would provide for them wherever they were. And when you compare that to Ruth, you see something pretty interesting. Because when we look at Ruth, rather than running from her problems, Ruth runs to God. In fact, when you read the story, you'll find that Naomi encouraged Ruth and Orpah to turn back and go home. And her encouragement to them isn't just an encouragement to return back home, but she actually encourages them to return to their own gods. If you look at Ruth chapter 1, verse 15, this is what you find. And these are the words of Naomi. She said, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. So Ruth's response is, wait a minute. I don't want to go back to the old gods. You know, either this quote-unquote faithful Israelite person, Naomi, whose allegiance should be to God, is encouraging her daughter-in-laws to turn away from God. And Ruth's response is, no, I'm not going to do that. Look at verses 16 and 17. You know, I mentioned this briefly last week because we sang a song that lined up with it. But Ruth's reply is, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and here's the key. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I'll die, and there we'll be buried. And this is what really solidifies it for me that Ruth was running to God. She says, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. And that use of the word Lord right there shows me that Ruth is loyal to the one true God. So why would Naomi encourage these daughter-in-laws to turn back and turn away from God? Well, some commentators suggest that Naomi was trying to hide the fact that her family was unfaithful because it was frowned upon for Israelites to marry Moabites. And so Naomi is afraid that when she goes back and gets back to Judah, she's going to be ridiculed because her family married outside of the tribe. And so some people say, well, she's trying to hide that fact, so she wants them to leave. I also think that Naomi's encouragement for them to turn around reveals two things. The first thing I think it reveals is that in most Israelites' minds, in the scriptures, the Old Testament, they thought that God was only for them. In their mind, their God was only for them, and they didn't want to share. And I think, again, it's just further evidence that Naomi's own faith in God is wavering. Now, right here in Ruth's response, it's distinctly different. Her view of God is different than Naomi's view of God. She says, "The Lord, may the Lord deal with me." And she uses that in our English translation, it says, "Lord." But she uses what we call the tetragram in Hebrew. Of course, this is a transliteration. But the tetragram is the four-letter designation, the proper name for God revealed to the Israelite people. And I think this is important to latch onto because you have this Moabite, someone that's outside, an outsider, who has come to know God in such a way that she feels comfortable using his proper name that was really only reserved for Israelite people to use. This is really directly related to the name that when Moses asked, "Well, who should I tell the people that who you are? If they ask me, what's his name, what should I say?" And he says, "I am." I am is directly related to Jehovah. It's an interesting response because it sounds like somebody taking a deep breath and exhaling in Hebrew. And this is how Ruth views God. And I would have to look very carefully, but as I recall through my studies, I think Ruth is the only one to use this word for God. Naomi never uses Lord. So it's interesting. Naomi ran from God, from her problems. Ruth runs to God in her problems. And I think that is the key right there to what we see about faith. The resilience of Ruth is much greater than Naomi, because here's the truth that I want you to take with you today. The greater our ability to trust God, the greater our resilience in the midst of adversity. And some of you say, "Well, that seems like it's pretty obvious." It might be obvious, but it's a lot harder to apply in life than you think. But the greater our ability to trust God, the greater our resilience in the midst of adversity. There's also another characteristic that exemplifies Ruth's loyalty and compassion that teaches us something about comfort and suffering. So keep in mind, Ruth is suffering through loss herself. Not only that, she's suffering through loss. She's made the decision to leave her home. She's made the decision to leave her family. She's made the decision to leave her way of life. But Ruth doesn't allow her own suffering to blind her to the suffering of others. This is what makes Ruth so powerful. She recognizes that Naomi is suffering. She recognizes, I believe, that Naomi is questioning God and walks through that suffering with her. That's what we talked about last week. God places people in our lives to walk alongside us through the suffering. And Ruth, in her own suffering and pain, is walking alongside Naomi. Now, Ruth really demonstrates something that Paul talks about in the New Testament. And I had the privilege to do a graveside service this week for Debbie Kaufman's uncle. And this is one of the texts I use because I think it's so powerful. And what we see in Ruth's life is the application of what Paul says about God in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. He says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles." Now, right there is the first part of Ruth's life that we talked about. She trusts God. She trusted God. And because she trusted God, she was resilient because she got comfort from God. And then Paul goes on to say this, "so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." And the second part of that is what Ruth does for Naomi. She's not blinded by her own pain, but she experiences the comfort of God in her own pain and then comforts Naomi in the same way. So she has this ability to comfort others because of her trust in God. One of the things that I experienced in chaplaincy wasn't just dealing with families and loss and tragic situations, but I was chaplain at Fayette Regional Health System when they went through their bankruptcy and eventually they sold their assets to Reed Health. One of the things that I prayed about and did during that transition when the hospital filed bankruptcy is I shifted my focus. I still provided comfort and care for patients that were experiencing loss and pain, but I intentionally made a shift to provide comfort for the pain and suffering of the employees of the hospital. Because what became a reality in that situation is a lot of employees walked through the doors that morning with the weight of knowing that it could possibly be their last day. And so they felt an extreme amount of stress, and in the midst of that stress, they had to continue to provide care for patients. Now, I want you to know, I experienced the same stress. I walked through the door in the morning knowing, hey, this could be my last day. But really, that never fazed me. I mean, you can ask Barbara. I think there were times when Barbara was worried, you know, what are we going to do if you lose this job? But for some reason, God gave me the ability to walk through there and continue to do my job and never worry about what was going to happen. But I want you to know something. I was so fulfilled in being present and being able to comfort those other people. And I believe that's why my stress never affected me negatively. Is because I found so much joy in just being able to talk to people that were struggling that it minimized the pain that I was experiencing. And so what happened was I received comfort in providing comfort. And I think this is what we see in the life of Ruth. Not only did she get comfort from God, but she received comfort from providing comfort to Naomi in her time of loss. So here's your second takeaway, the second thing you need to write down. And we're just going to add to the statement that we made before. The greater our ability to trust God and provide comfort to others in the midst of our adversity, the greater our resilience. So if you ask yourself the question, man, how can I be like some people? How can I bounce back better? How can I keep putting one foot in front of the other? You got to trust God, and you got to look for opportunities to comfort other people that are suffering. And when you do that, it helps shift your focus away from your own pain. So that's what we learned about resilience from Ruth. And the second R we're going to talk about is redemption. You know, Ruth and Naomi found themselves in a very precarious situation in the ancient world. Life for widows was extremely difficult. It was hard for women to find a job. It was hard for women to scavenge for enough food to feed themselves, let alone do it for two. And that's what you have in this situation. When Ruth goes out and scavenges the fields, she's doing it for not only herself, but for Naomi as well. But what we see in this account is that God proves his faithfulness by providing for two. He didn't just provide for Ruth, he provided for Naomi. And the reality is God's provision in this situation is far greater than just food. Now, I told you last week there's three primary characters. There's Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. He's known as the kinsman redeemer. If you read through the account, some of your translations may say kinsman redeemer, some may say guardian redeemer. If you're interested in learning more about what this kinsman redeemer is, Leviticus chapter 25, verses 25 through 55 goes into great detail about this concept of a kinsman redeemer. But this was a practice that was put into place through the law of Moses, to provide a way for people that experienced extreme difficulty. And really, it was a way for people to avoid perpetual poverty. And what would have happened in this situation with Naomi and Ruth, had there not been this idea of a kinsman redeemer, Naomi and Ruth would have found themselves in a situation where they would have never been able to overcome poverty. They would have lived the rest of their lives on the fringes and probably starving to death. So the concept is a close family member had the responsibility to redeem a family member that incurred a large amount of debt, or as we see in this case with Ruth and Naomi, a close family member had the responsibility to buy their land that belonged to their family and to marry the widow of a deceased family member. Now, Ruth is interesting for a couple of different reasons. One of those reasons is that because her story and her life kind of parallel ours. Because we've mentioned it already, Ruth was an outsider. This concept of kinsman redeemer was really within Israel. Ruth was a Moabite. She was outside of the tribe, outside of the family. But what she does is she finds herself in a situation where she is literally being bought into the family. This is what Boaz does. I want you to look at Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 3 through 4, because this kind of gives you an idea of how crazy of a situation this is. This is what we find in Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 and 4 about Ammonites and Moabites. No Ammonite or Moabite or any of their descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord, not even in the 10th generation. For they did not come to meet you with bread and water on your way when you came out of Egypt. And they hired Balaam, son of Beor, from Pethor and Aram, Naharaim, to pronounce a curse on you. I mean, this shows you how badly the Israelites looked on the Moabites. And according to Deuteronomy 23, they can't even enter into the assembly. They can't become a part of the congregation, a part of the people. And in our account here of Ruth, God is so rich in mercy and grace that he not only makes Ruth a part of the family, he uses her in the form of her offspring to bring about hope for the rest of the world. Because last week we saw that Ruth and Boaz have a child named Obed. Obed's the grandfather of David. Now flip over to Matthew chapter 1. I don't have the full text on the screen. But if you go to Matthew chapter 1, you get the lineage of Jesus. Now some of this lineage, if you start at like verse 3, we can read it in Ruth. Because it tells us how we get to Boaz, Obed, Jesse, and David. But if you continue to follow this genealogy, you'll find that at the end of the genealogy, it's leading to Jesus. So we can trace the lineage of Jesus back to Ruth. The most unlikely person to find themselves in the lineage of Jesus, a Moabite. Not even an Israelite, she's a Moabite. Not only is she a Moabite, she's an Moabite widow who God in his providence moves in the heart of Boaz to step up and to become a kinsman redeemer. Now, Boaz wasn't even first in line. There was somebody that was a closer relative, but when that person found out that he had to marry Ruth, the Moabite, he's like, nope, can't do it. And Boaz says, well, then I'm going to. And Boaz buys their land, he marries Ruth, they have a child, and generations later, from that child, we have the Savior of the world. Now, what God does for Ruth, he does for every single one of us. Because our lives parallel this way. We are all outsiders. We are all outsiders. We are all poor and destitute spiritually. But God provided a redeemer, a kinsman redeemer, to purchase us out of our bondage and marry us into the family of God. And just like Ruth, God still uses unlikely and ordinary people for his extraordinary work. I didn't write this on a slide, but I think that's something that's worthy of writing down. God uses unlikely and ordinary people for his extraordinary work. And what we see in this story is so rich. And it's really a lot deeper than just understanding how resilient, how we can be more resilient, how we can cope with pain and suffering. The story helps us to see ourselves and see God more clearly. And so I think when we approach this text, we have to ask ourselves this question: who are we most like in this life? Do your responses, do your reactions, my reactions to life look like that of Naomi, Ruth, or even Orpah? Now, Alistair Begg said this. He said, "The choice set before Orpah and Ruth is this: Yahweh plus nothing in Bethlehem, or everything minus Yahweh in Moab." And this is the choice that all of us are faced with in this life. Do we want Jesus and nothing, or everything and no Jesus? And we don't know anything else about Orpah's life, you know, the other sister-in-law. We don't know anything else about her life. We know that she chose to go back to her own gods, and that's where the story ends. But we see so much about Ruth's life and Ruth's decision to choose God. God not only redeemed Ruth, but he redeemed a whole community. And through that community, he redeemed a whole world. And maybe you identify more with Naomi. Throughout the years and through the pain that life brings, your confidence in God has decreased. But I want you to know that there's still hope. If your confidence in God has decreased because of the pain that life has brought, there is still hope. Because despite Naomi's despair and despite her doubts, she experienced God's goodness. Think about that in the story. Ruth's loyalty was a living example to Naomi of the love of God. And so despite the fact that Naomi doubts and that she's in despair, she still experiences the love of God. And like so many of the accounts that we read about in the Bible, Ruth experiences these things not only as an individual, but there's also the larger context of God's redemption and providence within a community. And it's really a story about how God uses an individual's experience to shape and to form a community. So I think we need to stop and think for just a few moments as we wrap this up about how this book not only informs us on an individual level, but how does this book inform us on a community level, as a community of believers? Now remember, the context of this book is set in the period of Judges. And the phrase and the theme of the book of Judges that so often appears over and over, and I mentioned this briefly last week, is this: there was no king in those days, and all the people did as they saw fit. Ruth is held up as a model that seeks and trusts God. That's what we learn from her. Those are the basic principles that we can take. She seeks and trusts God. And so the application for us as a body of believers is that we must always seek and trust God in times of difficulty and challenge. That's the bottom line. And whatever we're going through as a community of believers, primarily the two things that we need to focus on, we got to seek God and trust God. Now, I want you to know that over the course of the last year, several months, one of the things that we have seen here at Annis Creek is that we've experienced a lot of growth. And I'm thankful for that growth. You know, we have a lot of conversations, the elders and I talk, and we are thankful that each of you continue to choose to be a part of this community. But I want you to know, and I'm just going to be completely transparent and honest with you, that growth brings challenges. And growth brings difficulty. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm seeking God and I'm trusting God as we move forward. And I believe the elders are doing the same thing as well. They're seeking God and trusting God as we move forward. So I want to wrap this two-part series up by looking at how we're going to start to apply these principles right here at Hannis Creek. Some of you probably got a message if you've added Hannis Creek Christian Church as your church on the YouVersion Bible app. I sent out a little post earlier this week that sent you a questionnaire to fill out. We've developed a questionnaire that I'm asking you all to fill out. I have hard copies, and There's also an online Google form. You'll see these floating around. There's one back at the table back there. There's one at the table back there, one at the sound booth. I had one up here, but it got moved. I'll put it back. There'll be one up here, and there's a couple more. It's scrolling through on the announcements. If you're tech savvy, if you have a phone, all you got to do is scan this. It'll take you directly to the questionnaire. Fill it out. For some of you are saying, you know what, I don't want to scan anything because that's the mark of the beast, then I have a hard copy for you. You can fill out a hard copy. And our prayer is that this questionnaire will help us identify our effectiveness when it comes to our mission at Hannah's Creek and how we're using our facilities. And one of the hopes that we have is we can take this information that we get from these surveys and we can begin to seek God's direction through the information that we get. And my prayer is that, like Ruth, we would be able, all together, we would be able to stay unified in purpose and intent, and with a unified voice, we would all be able to say, where you go, I will go. Okay, because we all have personal preferences. We all have these little things that we cling to and hold on to. But my prayer is, like Ruth, we would say, God, where you go, I will go. And I'm confident that God will use this community just the way he used Ruth to be a person of hope and redemption. God will use this community to be a place of hope and redemption. Father, thank you so much for leaving us with accounts that inform our lives generations later. We see so clearly in your word that you are a God of hope, compassion, love, mercy, grace, and a God that leads. And in turn, you just simply ask us to trust. Father, my prayer is that here at Hannah's Creek, we would trust you through the adversity that we face, not only in our individual lives, but in our corporate lives when we gather together. That we would seek you, that where we would be able to say, where you go, I will go. And just in the action of trusting, Father, you will use us in extraordinary ways. You know, I find some parallels in the story of Hannah's Creek and Ruth, an unlikely place in the middle of nowhere that you are using for extraordinary things. Father, I pray that your promise to us would remain true, that your word would not return void, that your spirit would continue to work in our hearts, minds, and ultimately in our lives, that we would be people that represent you in the midst of brokenness and pain. And I pray these things in Jesus' name.